My guest at this time is Ohio Republican Congressman Bill Johnson, who represents the Buckeye State's 6th Congressional District. But today we're not talking about legislation or policy, but the vital importance of fatherhood and the state of fatherhood in America today. Congressman Johnson is the author of the brand new book, Raising Fathers: How Nurturing and Encouraging Fatherhood Helps Strengthen Families and Our Nation. And Congressman, thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Greg. Thanks so much.
Well, this book is very personal in a lot of different ways, talking about your own childhood and your own time as a father. Why did you ultimately decide to write the book?
Well, you know, every time there's a young teenage girl out there, Greg, that becomes pregnant, there's a young boy, teenage boy, most often, that's going to be a father. So oftentimes those young fathers to be are ushered out of the situation. You know, her parents don't really want to have anything to do with him because he has picked the flower off the tree before it fully bloomed, and so they're upset. His parents oftentimes shy away from it because of the responsibility of caring for a grandchild that they long before they expected to. And so too many times these young expectant fathers walk away. And then you've got all the other many, many reasons that take fathers out of the household: death, military service, just people who make bad choices to walk away from their families. The bottom line is that we've got millions of children, now a couple of generations worth of children, that are growing up in fatherless homes. It's undermining the strength of America's traditional family, which is one of the underpinnings of our system, and the underpinnings of the values of our country. And it's time we have a national conversation about the important role of fatherhood and how important it is that we get fatherly examples and role models for these now generations of children that have never seen a father role model.
It's such a big issue now. I don't know if you know the exact number. You probably do, given the research you did for the book. But the number of children born out of wedlock now is extremely high. I know in the African-American community, it's around 70% or so. And in the white community, it's around 40 now. So, I mean, we're talking about a major shift from when you were a child.
Those statistics are staggering. When I was a child, divorce and unwed pregnancies were the exception. Today, they're almost the rule. And it's really sad, the status of the American family. I value all children. I've got 4 children myself. I've got 6 grandchildren. They hold a very, very special place in my heart. As a young man, I played a parenting role in the upbringing of my siblings, my brother and 2 sisters, because I too was raised in a dysfunctional home with an alcoholic father and pretty much raised by a single mom that did everything she could to make ends meet. And so I not only do I understand this from a policy perspective and from a national American values perspective, but I understand it from a very personal perspective, the devastating consequences of not having a fatherly role model at home.
Congressman, you talk in the book about how your dad had a difficult relationship with his father, and then you also talk about, of course, and you just mentioned it now, how your father struggled with alcoholism, which led to abuse and infidelity and all sorts of things. So by the time that you were a young man, you became a dad pretty young in life, did you feel from your experience that you knew what not to be or what a good dad should be, or were you flying blind as a result of some of the dysfunction that you experienced?
Well, I tell you what, it was a combination of those things. To some degree, I was flying blind, but I can remember as a young boy, Greg, thinking to myself, hiding behind the sofa when the fighting and the anger was playing out right in front of me, worried that one of my parents was going to kill the other, or hiding in my bedroom. I can remember thinking, if I ever have a family of my own, my children will never, ever experience this kind of lifestyle. I will never do it this way. So some of my early forming of the role of a father came from what not to do. But I also, as is indicated in the book, I had some people stand in the gaps for me. I had a grandfather that played a very instrumental role in the early formative years of my life. I had uncles. I had military supervisors that I had. And, of course, I'd be absolutely 100% remiss if I didn't tell you that I believe God spared me much of the trauma that comes with growing up in the kind of dysfunctional family that I did. I mean, I look back at it, and I don't mean to sound melodramatic, but it almost feels like God just wrapped me up in His hands and shielded me from the dysfunction and the societal stresses and the cultural bombardments of that kind of dysfunctionality. It was like He set me apart and protected me from it. He became the father that I did not have in a natural sense.
In our culture today, Congressman, I don't need to tell you that God in many ways is looked at very differently than a generation or two ago. We see it now that even the Ten Commandments or images or whatever, they need to be, according to some, completely scrubbed away from the public square or anywhere else. And if you exercise your religion anywhere outside your house of worship, that's frowned upon. How has that impacted the crisis in the family with fatherlessness, and how important is it to get that back in order to solve this problem?
Well, I can tell you it's critically important. As I just mentioned, it played such a pivotal role in my life and my upbringing. You know, I believe with all my heart that our founders, most of whom had a strong faith foundation in their own personal lives, when they established freedom of religion. You'll note, Greg, they did not say freedom from religion. There's a big difference in freedom of religion. The ability to exercise your faith without the oversight and the impediment of a central government telling you what you can and cannot do in the exercise of your faith. It was never intended to be a freedom from religion. Religion and faith informed our founders. It has informed many of our nation's most predominant leaders, Ronald Reagan, Abraham Lincoln, John F. Kennedy, and it certainly informs the way that I go about my job as a husband, as a father, and in my role as a representative to Congress for the people that I serve. So we've got to get back to that, because without having that anchor, that central truth, to know that no matter what happens to us, that there is a Heavenly Father that can rise above the chaos and protect us and shield us and strengthen us through the tough times. You know, I don't believe for a second that God punishes His children into obedience. God will allow things to happen to us to strengthen us, to mold us, and to reveal Himself to us so that we understand who He is and how really ultimately dependent upon Him we are as human beings. And without that ability to make that connection, how many young people, how many children who don't have fathers at home, Greg, how many of them have no anchor to hold on to? It's devastating to them.
We're talking with Congressman Bill Johnson. The book is Raising Fathers, and we're going to talk a little bit about policy in just a moment. But later on in the book, of course, Congressman, you talk about the pain of your own divorce in the early 1990s. And
right.
And as you said earlier, you and your, you had a very different perspective on fatherhood going into it from the 1970s, based on your own experience. And even though you're active in your church and working hard to sustain an intact family, it didn't work. So talk about the pain of that and what you learned from that.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it was perhaps one of the darkest days in my memory. And it was certainly not something that I planned for. And in fact, I can remember my first wife and I sitting around the dining table as our children would talk about some of their friends whose parents had divorced, reassuring them that they never had that to worry about in our family. And I was the most surprised. You could have knocked me over with a feather when I learned that the stresses of my military career, the amount of energy that I was putting into providing for my family, which is something my father never did. Remember, I said I learned a lot about what not to do. You know, my dad would gamble away his paycheck, and then my mother had to work a job, two jobs sometimes, to try and put food on the table. And in the meantime, my dad was just throwing his money away. So providing for my family was a big, big issue for me. But I had no idea that the provisioning part of my character was coming into conflict with the fathering and husbanding part of my character. And when the light went out in my marriage, I had to figure out how to pick myself up. And boy, did God play a central role in that too, helping me to learn how to accept my share of the responsibility for that, and hopefully let that be a lesson to others and to prevent it from ever happening again.
The stories in this book of your family and your daughter with an unplanned pregnancy and then a tragic fire, and there's just so much in your life that you've dealt with, and how your faith and your focus have helped you through that is incredible. I know our time is short here, Congressman, so I want to talk about a couple of broader issues. And one of them, of course, is the statistics that I'm pretty sure are widely accepted across the political spectrum. And that's the link between intact, stable marriages and who is in poverty and who's not, and what kind of start to life that gives kids. I mean, the numbers seem to be drastic every time I see them come out.
Well, they are, and those that are in poor families seem to be experiencing a higher rate of divorce and separation today. And I will tell you, and I have to be honest with you, Greg, I don't have the statistics of what it was like prior to the last 20, 30 years. But I can tell you that as a young person, I mean, we were so poor. I joked yesterday, we weren't just poor, we were po. I mean, we couldn't afford the R in the word. That's how poor we were. And it was that survival instinct that kept families together when I was a kid. You didn't see the kind of family separation and divorce rates that you see today. You talked about in the story, in the book, the story of my daughter and the unwed pregnancy. That was the genesis of the book, Raising Fathers, because she found herself in that situation. And I very much opposed her being involved with the birth father for many of the reasons that I described earlier. But after the baby was born, something happened in the eyes and in the heart of the birth father, and he grew up very, very fast and became a responsible parent and a helper in the parenting role, and he and I actually drew very, very close. So I believe if we start a national conversation about the value of the American family and the strength that it provides in terms of generating opportunities, not only for character growth, but for opportunities for economic growth, I think it's critically important.
And finally, sir, there's a lot of folks, of course, who go back to the 1960s and programs since then that suggest that the government essentially rewards fatherlessness because there are programs to clearly help single mothers. And so that provides some sort of, whether it's conscious or not, incentive that if there is a glut of single parenthood out there, that the government's there to make things okay, even though life will obviously still be difficult in many ways. How much of the government providing that aid do you think has played into this, and what solutions, if any, would you like to see?
Well, I think big government has played a role in it. Now, I'm going to tell you that I find it hard to believe, even among Republicans and Democrats, both liberals and conservatives alike, if you sit down and have a conversation across the table, you won't find very many people that think that having government provide a hand out to a person that is truly in need is a wrong thing to do. But it comes back to a central point. Government was never intended to provide for the welfare of everybody. The government was there to build an environment. In our system, was to build an environment of opportunity where people could pursue their dreams and ambitions on their own terms. But it was never the intent of the government to take care of people. Governments have tried that throughout human history, and it hasn't worked, and it's not going to work with us. And so there's an unintended consequence of big government and big government handout and welfare programs. That's got to be a temporary state of existence. Even Franklin Roosevelt, who started the welfare state, the father of the welfare state, my goodness, he said the same thing. He said, we can't let this be a permanent state of mind because it'll sap the innovative and ingenuity spirit right out of the American people.
Congressman, I know we've kept you longer than we planned to, but it's just such a compelling book. We thank you for sharing such a personal story on so many different stages of your life. I'm sure in some ways it was painful, in other ways hopefully cathartic, but the lessons here and the advice I think will be of value to a lot of people. So congratulations on the book, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Ohio Republican Congressman Bill Johnson represents his state's 6th Congressional District. Again, the book is Raising Fathers, How Nurturing and Encouraging Fatherhood Helps Strengthen Families and Our Nation. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.